Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with the Paddy Power Golf Shootout.
It's golf, but not as you know it.
Watch on Paddy Power's YouTube channel tomorrow.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
It is Thursday's Off the Ball and it's coming up to 7:30, so it's time to talk to John Giles. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
Keeping well?
I'm still here, Nathan.
Good, good, good. That's what we want to hear. So you've been picking your all-time 11s. They've been going down a real treat over the last few months. They've helped the lockdown fly by for everybody. And
good.
We've been going through some of the international teams over the last few weeks. Football's going to return soon, so we're going to have to actually talk about some live football, unfortunately, because I've been really enjoying these over the last few Thursday nights. And tonight you're going to talk Scotland.
And Scotland, yeah.
Their all-time 11 and...
Yeah,
you would have gone up and played alongside so many incredible Scottish players down through the years, and I'd imagine again this was quite a tough choice, particularly when you look at some of the midfielders and the forwards that they had down through the years.
It is, Nathan. You know, I'll try to explain it as we go along, because people will have different ideas to me quite normally. But I mean, I just I do the best I can. When you've got so many great players that you can pick from, then it's not easy. But yeah. Anyway, we'll do our best, Nathan.
So you've gone for a 3-4-3 formation. We'll start with the goalkeeper. We were just talking with Richie there that there used to be a lot of joking about the lack of quality of Scottish goalkeepers. Yeah. But you have a short list of Andy Gorm, David Harvey, Alan Ruff and Jim Leighton.
Yes.
Who have you gone for?
I've gone for David Harvey.
Right.
David was David, I played with him at Leeds.
Yeah.
Very, very solid goalkeeper, Nathan. Took over from Gary Sprague. Who had been having a bad time. You know, I think when Don was struggling early on in his career, he put a lot of young lads in, and one of those included Gary Sprague, who did very, very well for him. And then he got to a stage, Gary was making a lot of mistakes, and I think Don was being loyal to him. I think he should have been out of the team before, I think his nerves went on him, Nathan. And funny enough, we were playing Birmingham in the semi-final of the Cup in 1972, and a big surprise to us all, Don left Gary Sprague out and brought Dave Harvey in. And Gary never got back into the team again.
Mm.
So he was very solid, David. He wasn't spectacular. A lot of great goalkeepers in those days, Pat Jennings and Shilton and these guys. He wouldn't have been in that bracket, but he was very, very good and very solid.
16 caps for Scotland. He played for Scotland in the 1974 World Cup. Very unfortunate, though, with Leeds. Picked up a bad injury, had an accident, and ended up, should have been first choice for that Leeds side that reached the European Cup semi-final in 75 and ended up missing out.
Yes. I was quite close with him. I used to room with him. He was out one night and he crashed the blooming car, Nathan.
Right.
And then he couldn't play for the rest of the season. But he was very, very, very solid. Very good goalkeeper.
Did you like to have the one roommate over the course of the season, or did you rotate, or were there certain people you'd room with quite a bit?
Mostly Dave. I think when you had a room, like say Norman Hunter was in with Terry Cooper and Billy Bremner was in on Clark. So yeah, we got settled in like that.
Yeah,
Nathan. Although all the lads and these lads got on well together anyway. You know.
Yeah. And did you like rooming with someone who'd be up chatting to you for half the night, or
no.
Did you want to be left alone?
No, left alone and go to sleep early. Well, as you know, Nathan, in football, it's no good having good nights of sleep Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then it comes to Friday and you don't sleep the night before the match, which is the most important one of the lot.
Mm.
I used to take a couple of sleeping tablets to make sure, Nathan, you know, because it was vital to get a good night's sleep before a match. But Dave didn't keep me awake at all.
Yeah. But on the sleeping tablets, would you have been someone who got nervous then ahead of big matches that you'd be worried that actually you wouldn't get a good night's sleep?
Well, that was it. You know, it didn't matter to me whether it was a big match. I used to take it was a regular habit Friday night or the night before the match, Nathan, because that's when you need a good night's sleep. As I said, it's no good sleep if you're playing on Saturday. It's no good sleep Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and you don't sleep Friday night. It's all gone to waste, to be quite honest. So it's just to make sure that you get a good night's sleep. It wasn't nerves or anything, you know. I mean, it was just to make sure that you did get a sleep, you know.
So David Harvey's your goalkeeper. You've gone with three centre halves. We'll talk about some of the fullbacks in a while and who may have gone if you'd gone with four at the back. But what you've done again is you've divided them into certain groups, and you can talk about some of the players as we go along and who you've selected. So your first grouping of centre halves: Ron Yates, Alan Hansen, Frank McClintock, and Alec McLeish.
Yes, and I've gone for Alan Hansen.
Hansen only won 26 caps for Scotland. Wasn't even included in the squad for the 86 World Cup.
No, I
know there were various different reasons, and there were injuries, and there were some falling outs along the way. Like at that period, was Hansen comfortably the best centre half in English football in the 80s?
Yeah, I was surprised. I think there was a big fallout. I think Alex Ferguson had something to do with that, with Kenny Dalglish at that particular time. I don't know what it was. There was a bit of a fallout anyway. At that time that he wasn't picked. But what you used to find a lot, Nathan, in those days, lads who moved down to England from Scotland gave up a lot of chances to be picked. I mean, the great Dave Mackay got 22 caps.
Yeah.
Eddie Gray got 22 caps. I think Peter Lorimer got 20-odd caps. So it was no coincidence. I think at that time, for a lot of the time anyway, you had a selection committee who always favoured the dads playing and left to play in Scotland.
Hansen was in your all-time Liverpool team as well.
Yeah, I think it was great. I thought Hansen was a great player.
Mm.
And again, like we talked about Beckenbauer and that, Nathan, he made it look easy. You know, he seemed to be strolling through a match because, again, when he was on the ball at the back, if somebody got too tight, if he had a good change of pace, he didn't look like it, you know. But he was very calm on the ball, because he obviously knew he had the space and could distribute it well. And obviously, playing in a great team, his distribution didn't have to be great because you had Souness and, you know, Dalglish and all these players around him. But no, he was a terrific player, Alan Hansen.
That must just suck the confidence out of so many strikers as well when you're up against a centre-half who is that calm, is unflappable, that you feel no matter what you do, no matter how many runs you make, that they're not going to lose their composure, they're not going to switch off.
No. And getting on the ball. I mean, a lot of defenders, like Big Jack said at Leeds, he was a great defender, but he wasn't that easy on the ball. Whereas Hansen was, you know, Hansen could take it out, no problem. He could be looking up and like all great players, had plenty of time on the ball, or seemed to have plenty of time on the ball. Now he was top notcher and obviously a very, very good defender.
Mm. So Alan Hansen, I guess, an automatic selection in any Scotland team. Your next grouping: Willie Miller, Billy McNeil, Gordon McQueen, and Colin Hendry. Who have you gone for?
Yeah, I've gone for Billy McNeil.
Right, the ultimate one-club man.
Yeah, well, he was Mr. Celtic and a good leader, Nathan. You know, he was an old-fashioned centre-half, you would say today. Big lad, really good in the air, okay on the ground, but didn't try to do anything spectacular on the ground, knew his limitations and gave it to the players that could play, as they say, the managers used to say in those days. So very seldom made a mistake. Good hearted lad, played for the team, and really, really top notch.
You mentioned Hansen coming down there to play in England. A player of Billy McNeil's status and stature, maybe never wanted to, because listen, they literally have a statue of him outside of Celtic Park. When you were playing in England, would you have been very much aware of his talents and a player who you thought could come down and play at the very highest level in English football as well?
Oh, he could have done, Nathan. But you get a lot of lads, especially in you know, Rangers, Celtic, they love the club. And I think he was one of those lads actually loved the club. He was a long time there as a player and then came as a manager. I think he two spelled as a manager. So they do fall in love with the club, and the fans fall in love with them. You know, he captained the team when they won the European Cup and that. So he was very, very much attached to the club. And you get some players like that, that they're few and far between. And he would have been a hero with the Celtic fans for what he did for the club and over the years.
In terms of the style of player he was? Was he a different style of player to Hansen? Was it more of a heart of the line, put your body on the line wherever possible?
Yeah, he wouldn't have been as comfortable looking, or he wasn't as comfortable on the ball as Hansen was. There weren't many as comfortable as him anyway. But he was the old fashioned centre half. Really good in the air, won tackles, blocked shots, did all the things that you would expect big centre halves to do, and he did them. And he was a big leader in that particular team.
Yeah. All right, so Billy McNeil again. Just the 29 caps for Billy McNeil, albeit at a time when they were probably harder to earn. Your final centre-half then for the back three, your shortlist is Kenny Burns, Martin Buchan, Richard Goff and Matt Elliott.
Yeah, I've gone for Richard Goff.
Right.
I thought he was a good all-round player, Nathan. He was only 1 year at Spurs and then went back to Rangers. But he was a demanding type of player. He was quite mobile. Covered the ground well, used the ball well. Especially a good centre half, or a good player at the back. Really good blocker shots. Good getting good tackles in, but was comfortable enough on the ball to take it out.
Mm. Like Billy McNeil, a big leader as well of his club. Captained Rangers to their 9 in a row. You know, that 1 year he was at Spurs brought them to an FA Cup final.
Yeah.
Played in 2 World Cups with Scotland as well. Like, when you're throughout this run of picking all-time 11s, when you're thinking of your centre halves and the common traits that they generally had, like, did you want a centre half who was very vocal, who was very loud, who was always, you felt, fully in command of the rest of the back four?
Yeah, well, what happened with Billy McNeil and these guys? You said in those days, then there wasn't as much playing out from the back. You know, you usually had a big centre-forward and you were getting up the centre-forward. So the centre-halves in those days had to win an awful lot of ball in the air. And these particular players could do that, especially Billy McNeil. Alan Hansen wasn't great. He was okay in the air, but he wasn't regarded as the big centre-half, you know. Whereas Billy McNeil and the other lads, the big centre-halves, come and win it and get the tackles in.
Mm.
You know, really defending. You know, a lot of it now, as you see, they're playing out from the back, Nathan, a lot, and you have to be like a midfield player now to be a defender nowadays, which I think it's overdone. I think the main thing is defending and be good enough to give it to players who were in the middle of the field who could do it on the ball. But that's the way times have changed. But these guys playing in those days, Billy McNeil and Alan Ruffell, were that type of player. Win it.
You've gone with three centre-halves then, so you haven't picked any full-backs, but there have been plenty of good Scottish full-backs as well. If you were to look through them and know your shortlist, say for right-back, Danny McGrain, Steve Nicol, George Burley, Sandy Jardine, Nicol is obviously the most recent of those. Was he the best Scottish right-back of recent times?
I think so, Nathan. He was very mobile, he could play in midfield, and he played in the great Liverpool teams. He wouldn't have got much publicity because of all the great players around him, but he always did a good job. Very, very solid. And was a better player than he looked, in my opinion, Nathan. I thought he was a top-class lad.
The left-backs then, who could have gone for Arthur Alderston, Eddie McGreedy, Willie Donaghy, Frankie Gray, Tommy Gemmell, and Andy Robertson, probably the great current Scottish player?
Yeah, I haven't been recently going for the current players. Mm. But I think Andy Robertson is so outstanding that I think he'll last for a long time, Nathan, and I've gone for him.
Right.
I think he's really, really outstanding. And they're very good players, excellent players that you mentioned. Yeah, but this lad has done it for the last 2 or 3 years. And I think he will go on to be one of the greats.
Yeah, you think that, like, this... It's hard to imagine it's a blip considering he's been to 2 Champions League finals. He's on the verge of winning a Premier League title. But I know often the comparisons with himself and Alexander-Arnold, I think you've touched on it before, his defensive ability, is that what brings him to a slightly different level maybe to Alexander-Arnold?
Yeah, well when I look at fullbacks, even in the modern game, I'm looking how are they defending, Nathan?
Mm.
And going forward is a bonus. And this lad, he's defended extremely well, but has made a lot of goals from that position. You know, I think Alexander is better distributing the ball, better going forward than him. But there wouldn't be that much between them, even in the laying on of goals.
Yeah.
But I think he's just outstanding. His attitude is great. Every match he's up for it. And I think he will go on. I don't think he's going to sit back in any way whatsoever. I think he'll finish up to be one of the greats.
Yeah, does seem to have a brilliant attitude, all right, Andy Robertson. I'm going to take a very quick break, John, because we want to give a bit of time to the midfielders and the attacking players that you selected, because there's a heck of an amount of talent in there. We're picking John Giles, all-time Scotland 11, right back after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with the Paddy Power Golf Shootout.
It's golf, but not as you know it.
Watch on Paddy Power's YouTube channel tomorrow.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
So we're in the process of selecting John Giles' all-time Scotland 11. This is the 11th John Giles all-time 11 that we've been selecting over the past couple of months. You can get them all right now on the OTB Sports app. We've gone from Liverpool to Manchester United, Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Leeds, the Republic of Ireland, a quite incredible rest of the world 11, England, Wales, and now we are on to Scotland. And so far, as we look through the team, it's a 3-4-3 formation. The goalkeeper, David Harvey, and a back three of Alan Hansen, Billy McNeil, and Richard Goff. Let's get on to the midfield then, John. And again, we've some little groupings here and you're going to select one from them. First up, we have Jim Baxter, Bobby Murdoch, Paul McStay, Billy Bremner, and Paddy Crerand.
Yeah. I've gone for Billy Bremner.
How important was his Scottishness to Billy Bremner? I know he captained them at the 74 World Cup, over 50 caps. Well, that Scottish heritage, was it something you spoke about often?
Billy, yeah. Billy spoke about it a lot, often. Especially playing with Scotland. I was very proud. He was very proud of it, as most of the Scottish lads were in my time. Eddie Gray, Peter Lorimer, and these lads, and we had a few of them, Gordon McQueen, Joe Jordan, all loved playing for Scotland. But Billy was, he was a real Scot. He was a real Scot. He enjoyed it.
Right. You've spoken about him often down through the years and your partnership in the middle of midfield for Leeds and just how great a player he was. When you were in the midst of it, when you're in the thick of that time together at Leeds, were you always aware of just how good he was?
Oh yeah. Well, Billy was an outstanding player, and Billy is certainly one of the most confident players I ever met in my life, Nathan. Even before a match, you know, you'd be quiet. Well, I would, and most lads would be quiet. Billy'd be hopping around. Billy expected to be a star of every game, Nathan. And a lot of the times, he was.
Yeah.
But that was his attitude. You know, I never saw him nervous. Always bouncing around. A bloody nuisance in the dressing room sometimes, you know. Because sometimes, well, I was quiet. Norman Hunter, a few of the lads be quiet. He'd be hopping around. I don't know where he got the energy from. And he's saying when he trained. Like, Billy wasn't a good trainer. The horse country's run, and him and Big Jack were always last. And he wasn't really true, but put a ball out, and he'd come to life, Nathan. He'd stay there all day, playing and staying on the pitch. You know, Billy expected and was the star in every game that he played. Unbelievable confidence.
How did he deal with the games when he wasn't the star, when things didn't go right for him?
I never remember him reacting when it didn't go right for him. Do you know what I mean? I never ever heard him say, "Wasn't my day today."
Right.
No, he had unbelievable confidence in himself.
Yeah,
Nathan, and then plenty to say on the pitch to the opposition and that.
As you say there, pre-match at times, yourself and himself probably very different personalities.
Oh yeah, totally different.
Would you have rubbed each other up the wrong way from time to time? Would you have clashed often?
Not really. No. We didn't clash on the pitch at all. Like Billy was, what would I say? He'd, especially if we went to goal down, Billy'd want to get up around the edge of the box, and I'd be sort of more calm. Look, Billy, hang on, just keep playing. And because the goals he scored, the dramatic goals he scored, were incredible, Nathan. Semi-finals, finals. You know, I won't give you a list of them, but. I think three of the semi-finals we got to Wembley, scored the winning goals, you know, and good goals, important goals, you know.
Yeah.
Like he'd get, he was goal scoring midfield and plenty of energy. His energy was unbelievable, bouncing around. In those days, he didn't have to hold the midfield. Billy Bremner was out the midfield players. Well, I was lucky enough to score 115 goals. He scored 115 goals from midfield. Now, a lot of mine were penalties, but his was just dramatic goals and important goals, Nathan.
In a way, you were probably lucky to find each other at the same club at the same time, because everything you've ever said about the way you played together, you complemented each other so well, whether it is personality, whether it was skill-wise, that you both knew your role for the team. It was quite a similar role at times, and there was no real ego involved with either of you.
No, we just had to get on. Well, when you're playing together in the middle of the field like we did, you react to each other, Nathan, you know? Like, I knew what Billy was going to do before. He knew what I was going to do. That's how you get a combination going in the middle of the field. But he could win the ball as well. There was no hanging around with him. Like, he was just a bundle of energy, Nathan.
So, Billy Bremner, an automatic selection in midfield. Let's move on. The next shortlist, John White, Bobby Hope, John Craig, Graeme Souness and George Graham.
Yeah, I've gone for Graeme Souness.
Mm. This is already shaping up to be the toughest midfield of any of the 11s you've picked so far.
Yeah. Well, these are all Scottish lads. born and bred in Scotland, and Scotland with a great tradition, as we know, for breeding players anyway. But Graeme, I think, really found his way at Liverpool. I know he was at Spurs. I think he got impatient there and went to Middlesbrough, which was a good grounding for him. But when he went to Liverpool, I think they were made for each other. Graeme commanded the middle of the field. He had plenty of confidence in himself. Different to Billy Bremner, he wasn't quite as good at beating players around it. He wasn't particularly quick, Graeme, but a great presence, great distributor of the ball. And whether the game was tough or easy, he wanted the ball. You know, you've often heard of the Sunshine Boys, Nathan, the fellas who are winning, they're winning 5-0 and give me the ball, they can't get enough of it. You know, if they're losing 1-0 at home, you don't see them. Graeme wasn't a sunshine boy. He was anything but. He would take responsibility. He had plenty to say on the pitch. Could dish it out, Nathan, as well. And put a top-class player.
The sunshine boys that you talk about, like all the great teams, didn't have too many of them, and they all had a Graeme Souness-style figure that when... Yeah. And it's always going to get tough at some stage in sport and in football. Someone you can rely on. Everything you ever say about Souness, that like that Liverpool team, in hindsight, you'd almost look back and you'd feel they won every game quite convincingly. What wasn't the case. There was tough games, and Souness was there front and centre every single time.
Definitely. I mean, the Sunshine Boys, they go missing, Nathan. You know, Liverpool, like all the great teams, don't carry a sunshine boy. You know, if you look at all the winning teams, it doesn't matter who they are, and to Liverpool this year, you could see somebody messing around Liverpool team. And you see Klopp, you take his head off. You know, and Don Revie says, all the top managers, they just wouldn't be in the club for 2 minutes if they were a sunshine boy. Get them out of the club. And Graeme brought that determination and control with him into the what was a successful Liverpool team anyway. So, no, Graeme was top-notch.
You would have played against them, I don't know if you played, when he was with Middlesbrough.
Like, yes.
Could you see the signs there that this player was going to go on and become one of the great midfielders of his time?
Oh, yeah, he was on his way. He was only starting off. Actually, I had a couple of clashes with him. I played against him at Leeds, Nathan, and he was down the back of my legs, and you know, and when you get that, you don't say anything, but I was in a tackle, an incident with him at Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And I copped him. And I'm not bragging about it, but I copped him on it. And he went crackers with me. He went crackers. He said, I'll break your effing leg. And I said, well, we'll see about that, Graeme, you know. But we were good pals after that. Now, Graeme could dish it out.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. And he could take, he had to take it as well, you know.
Knowing that he could dish it out and knowing that you could dish it out from time to time, was any part of you worried in the years that followed when you come up against him again that he'd be eyeing up revenge?
I don't think I only want to come up against him in a League of Ireland match, actually. I was playing for the League of Ireland against Liverpool in a friendly match at Dalymount. And actually, it was one of the lads who played in midfield with me. I can't think of his name now. But he copped Graeme. And Graeme thought it was me. And he said, that's the second time you've caught me. I'm going to do you in. Graeme, he was raging, you know, coming on. Well, it had nothing to do with me. But that's the way it was.
Yeah, and when you ended up working together years later on the television.
Yeah, once the matches, funny enough, Nathan, all that happened on the pitch.
Yeah.
And some of it was pretty bad stuff. But once the match was over, that was the end of it.
Yeah.
I never held like a personal thing, or nobody held it personally against me. It was all part of the game. You give it, you take it, you know.
Mm. Let's move on, because we don't want to run out of time here. Okay. Your next selection then, you have a short list of Archie Gemmill, he of the Wonder Goal, Bertie Auld, Dave McKay, Gordon Strachan, Don Masson.
Yeah, I've gone for Dave McKay.
Yeah.
The great Dave McKay.
One of the great all-rounders.
He was one of the greats, and I don't mention great very lightly. Actually, I made my debut against him, Nathan. He was playing with Spurs. He'd just come down from Scotland, and they were going on to the great years. That was in 1959. They didn't win it in 59, but they went on in 1960 and 61 to win the double and all the trophies they won. But he was the driving force in that team. And they used to say with Danny Blanchflower, like, Danny was the artist and Dave was the killer, like. But Dave had as much ability as Danny Blanchflower did.
Mm.
He could score goals. He was all over. Like, if you were playing on the right wing, you held the ball long enough, Dave McKay would be tackling you.
Mm.
If you're on the left wing, he'd be tackling him as well. A bundle of energy, but could really play and drive the players on, Nathan. Yeah, he was a real player, you know.
So your last selection then from midfield, the shortlist, John Collins, Asa Hartford, Gary McAllister, Bobby Collins, Paul Lambert.
Bobby Collins. How could I forget Bobby Collins? Bobby Collins was great. Bobby Collins was a great player for Celtic. He came down to Everton for a season, then came to Leeds. Bobby Collins was 75% responsible, I think, for the success and the future of the Leeds team. That's how good he was. An old pro, and you can't beat an old pro with their attitude. This is with Norman Hunter, Paul Madeley, Paul Reaney, Terry Cooper, Eddie Gregg, Youngful is coming on. This was a guy to train and do what's needed to be done. To become a pro, to become a player. And Bobby Collins was responsible in many ways, in a great way, for the eventual success of the Leeds team.
Mm. When eventually you succeeded him in the middle of midfield alongside
Well, he was a great, he was great. Yeah, he was great for me, Nathan. I went to Leeds when I was 22, I played to the right-hand side mostly. You know, Bobby was in the middle, and that was my natural position. So, but when I left Manchester United, I was only 22, and the previous season, don't go too much on it, I had a bad time in the semi-final of the Cup, but Matt lost confidence in me. I was trying to do what Bobby Collins could do when I was too young. So when I went to Leeds, I had 2 years as an apprentice, I would say, to Bobby Collins. Bobby got injured and I took over from him. But I needed that couple of years to be able to do what needed to be done.
Mm.
But Bobby Collins was a great example to all the young players and to Leeds United.
Let's get on to the front three, because we don't have a lot of time. So your first shortlist, Mo Johnson, George Orden, Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Law, Peter Larmour, Frank McAvenny, Steve Archibald.
Yeah.
Who have you gone for?
I have gone for, where am I, Nathan? I'm on the forwards.
You have a choice between Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Law, I guess, essentially.
Well, I've gone for Dennis Law.
Okay.
I've gone for Dennis Law. Dennis, again, I think was one of the greats, Nathan.
You would have played with him, did you, at United?
I played with him, yeah, I played with him for a season when he first came to United. And he's the most dynamic player I ever played with. One of the most dynamic players I've ever seen, certainly the most dynamic player I've ever played with. Ball's flying across the box, and you think nobody's going to get him, Dennis would get him.
Mm.
Aggressive, good in the air, especially coming from right to left side of the pitch. Was a great dribbler, be totally different to Jimmy Greaves, for example, who was a dribbler and go past people. But Dennis was the one that would contribute more in winning the ball back. And anywhere there was a chance of getting it, he'd be in, he'd be quick, he'd be aggressive, and he'd get the balls that other people couldn't get to it, in my opinion, Nathan. Scored a lot of goals for Manchester United.
Yeah, 237 goals, only behind Rooney and Bobby Charlton in the all-time list.
Yeah, one of the greats.
Only Scottish player to have won European Footballer of the Year as well, which he did in 1964. Yeah,
he won it
in 1964. He
got an injury, Nathan, before the European Cup final in 68. And to be honest, he was never the same again. Dennis needed this physical attributes that he had, the quickness and that. And he got this bad knee injury. He didn't play in the European Cup final in 68. And I don't think he quite got it back again,
Yeah,
Nathan. But when he was fit and well, he was brilliant.
So Dennis Law then ahead of Jinky Johnson there, was that a did you see much of him? Did you see much of that Celtic side that won the European Cup in 67?
Did I see much of them?
Yeah.
I saw too much of them. They beat us in the semi-final. Yeah. Hammered us at that. And Jimmy Johnson was brilliant. Absolute genius. And I put him in that list there because I've got another list where John Robertson is leading it. And I know a lot of people say, why not Jimmy Johnson? Well, I put John Robertson in instead because I think John Robertson, Jimmy Johnson was unique in his way and what he did at Celtic at beating players and that. But John Robertson was unique in a different way and I think even more influential than Jimmy Johnston. He played for the Notts Forest, people who remember him, like look a small dumpy lad playing on the left wing. He's the only left winger or winger I've ever seen that could control the game from a left wing position. Nathan, his positional sense was incredible.
Yeah,
because and he was when he got up on the when he had to attack the backs, he could do it. But he initiated the attacks, like the John McGovern in midfield. John McGovern was a very ordinary player, but all he had to do was get it out to John Robertson, and he'd do the rest from there. Usually, you have to do it from the middle of the field.
So, how did he do it?
Because his positional sense was so good that he couldn't mark him. Like great players, he gave the fullback two choices, a bad one and a terrible one. In other words, he used to come so deep that if the right back got too close to him, he'd get the ball behind him. So he had to give him like 10, 12 yards to stop him getting behind him. So he'd get it to his feet and he'd do it from there. He'd pick a pass out like a midfield player could do. And when he had a chance to go up, you remember him with Trevor Francis in the European Cup, he could be the player as well when he got up there. Like, he was a double player in many ways. He could do his bit defending, but initiating attacks from the left wing position. He's the only one I've ever seen doing it, Nathan. Either from the right wing or the left wing. He was incredible.
Could he have played in the middle of midfield?
Put him in front of Jimmy Johnston, basically.
Could John Robertson then have just been a centre midfielder?
Probably not.
Right.
He might not have had the engine or the positional sense to do it from that particular position, Nathan.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like once you got on the wing, you had the space. See, there's one great thing about if you play properly on the wing, Nathan, nobody gets behind you. Because if what the wingers generally do, should do, is have their back to the touchline. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So now if the ball's, you can see across the pitch if you're in the right position, which he was all the time. Right? So when the ball's coming out to you, certainly nobody coming from behind you. Right? So you had more room if you were doing it in the right way, which he did. And he was quick enough, and if somebody did get too close, to go by him. And he went past him in the vital areas around the edge of the box to get the crosses in, to make goals and score goals. And he's the only one I've seen do it. So Jimmy Johnson was great as well, doing what he did for Celtic, which was to be players at the end line. But if Jimmy Johnson was playing in the Notts Forest team, I don't think he would have been as influential as he was with the Celtic team.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know that's a little bit complicated, but I think the job that John Robertson did for Notts Forest, winning the European Cup twice in the league and that, was an even more important, or I would say a bigger job than Jimmy Johnson did for Celtic.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Johnson was great as well.
And John Robertson set up the goal for Trevor Francis in 79 and scored the goal that won it for Forest in 80.
Yeah.
He was on a shortlist with Davy Cooper, Lou McCarry, Willie Henderson, Eddie Gray, Willie Johnson and Bobby Lennox. We're pretty much out of time.
Okay.
We need your final selection. I think it's going to be a straightforward one. Your shortlist was Ian St. John, Ali McCoys, Kenny Dalglish, Alan Gilzean, Graeme Sharp and Andy Gray.
Yeah, Kenny Dalglish. I think I've spoken about him so much before. One of the greats. I know we're running out of time. One of the greats. Couldn't speak too highly about him. And just a fantastic player.
All right, John, great stuff. It's a heck of a Scotland team from down through the years. Dave Harvey in goals, back three of Hanson, McNeil and Goff in midfield. It's Bremner, Souness, Mackay and Collins and a front three of Law, Dalglish and Robertson. Great stuff, John. We'll talk
Thanks,
to you next
Nathan.
Week.
Thank you.
All right, quick break. Back after 8 with Paul McGinley and Owen Merchant.
The OTB Podcast Network.